This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
And then there were four teams, four coaches, four quarterbacks in the NFL playoffs. And the pairings are certainly very, very interesting. In Andy Reid and Bill Belichick meeting in the Chiefs-Patriots game, you've got two guys who faced off in the Super Bowl before. It's only the second time two coaches that had played one another in a Super Bowl will meet in a conference championship game. In the other, you have Sean Payton and the new guy, Sean McVay, who is the youngest coach ever to win a playoff game, eclipsing John Madden when his Rams won a week ago. I think these matchups are fascinating for a lot of reasons, but maybe the best is that you have coach-quarterback pairings in each one that are very, very interesting and unique.
Well, shall we get right to it, or are we?
Well, aren't we comparing them to married couples? Is that what we're doing?
Well, or, you know, other couples.
Yeah, just a couple.
Yeah. But, you know, it is a really important combination. I mean, look, that's the thing. And I think Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson is right up there. It's important in the league, obviously. And you see, I'm trying to think who the final four was last year. Doug Peterson is certainly a really good quarterback coach. He's backup quarterback, you know, and was Andy Reid, was he a quarterback at like BYU or where did he? Because do you remember that clip that we saw during the Monday night game where he's like a 260-pound 7-year-old?
Yes.
The punt passing kick competition.
That is the weirdest thing. When you see that picture of him, you're like, my God.
He was huge.
He was enormous.
And he's a big guy now. I think he's, 6'4", 6'5". But, you just think about all of the different. And, of course, Belichick was in there. And I don't know about, you know, Mike Zimmer and what was it, Case Keenum last year?
Offensive tackle at BYU.
He was an offensive tackle?
That's correct.
Well, he was in the punt, pass, and kick.
He was.
When he was a kid. So he probably thought he was going to be a quarterback, just like everybody did. I was a running back in flag football, you know, and I thought I was going to be a running back. So, and I think every, you know, player in the NFL at one point played quarterback or running back. So anyway, yeah, that's a winning combination.
The idea today was we were going to compare the coach-quarterback combinations that are left to couples, what they would be like if they're a couple. And I thought Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they're the couple that's been together for way too long. They've been together forever. In fact, they've been together so long, they show no outward signs of affection when they're in the same room together. They could be at a party, you'd have no idea that they were married to each other because they don't ever talk to each other. They don't make eye contact. There's not even so much as a chaste peck on the cheek between the two of them. By all appearances, they've still got a happy marriage because they're still together after all these years. But man, they don't even talk to each other at parties.
So they're like an old comfortable couch.
Yes.
That you don't want to get rid of. You could get a new fandangled couch that's not quite as comfortable, but you're perfectly fine with the one you have. It's been successful, and so why change?
Each one has gone on so long that they're like, I don't have the energy to go and find somebody new.
Hold on.
Like, even if I wanted to leave.
Who's the couch?
Who's getting sat on? I think they would each be sitting side by side. They'd be a love seat.
Okay.
Is what they would be.
Well,
old, comfortable love seat.
I always picture Brady and Belichick as like old gangsters. And I'm not talking about gangstas. I'm talking about gangsters.
What do you say, huh?
From the 30s.
Hey, Tommy, you get the air out of that ball, okay? What do you say we go film the Jets together?
See? I can't get enough. I had to incorporate Jess in my explanation of those two guys. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much they talk.
They've both got Tommy guns.
Yeah, exactly.
The old school machine guns.
What is that,
guns?
Some kind of play on words there?
Tommy gun. Yeah, there you go. And, you know, they've got the striped suits.
Yeah. Fedoras.
Pinstripe suits, the fedoras.
Straight out of the mask, huh? You got Jim Carrey up your sleeve?
Yeah, and the Tommy gun looks like that thing. It's got the round, you
That's
know,
correct.
Chamber in
yeah.
front of it. And yeah, because they've been together. They know each other's secrets. Probably each one knows something really bad about the other one. But, you know, they're moving along, cruising along.
You know what I think would make this exercise more fun at the end? Is that when we go through these quarterbacks and coaches and their relationships, which one most closely resembles our own?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Okay.
That's a fantastic idea.
Our own marriages?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, fraught with danger, but I like it. A high wire act.
Oh, that's a
no
problem.
Net.
That's going to be a problem
Kathy
for me.
Kathy doesn't listen, so yeah. I'm all right.
You hope.
Yeah, she might.
Well, maybe we could be compared to Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, because one of them is a fat, old, ugly guy, and the other is the beautiful, younger component of the marriage.
Okay. That's we could great. Get ourselves in trouble that, this
yeah,
segment,
Dave Wyman with a kick save on that one.
Yeah.
That was pure genius.
So what else do you have, Danny? Let's let Danny get in trouble first.
Okay, so what about you with Brady and Belichick?
Brady and Belichick are the old couple that have been together forever. Okay. They show no outward signs of affection.
Right.
Next one I'll say is Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Andy Reid, we're so happy that he's got a new partner with him, because for years he's been with someone, but I just didn't really think it brought the best out of him. He's with McNabb, and they were good, but Andy had so much more to offer. And then he was with Alex Smith, and look, Alex is dependable and stuff, but that is not anyone that's going to excite someone. But now he's with Mahomes, and you've seen Andy really come into his own. He's got his confidence. He's got the excitement. They're setting the world on fire. They might be couple of the year. It is. I always knew it had it in him, and I'm just so happy for Andy.
We had a really dumb linebacker at Stanford, and one time he said to me, because I was dating this girl at Stanford, he goes, you know, you could do a lot better. I feel like that's what somebody is coming and saying to Patrick Mahomes. You could do a lot better. You could have, like, Sean McVay, and you've got this old guy that's broken down here. To me, it looks like Andy Reid looks like the old guy who's wealthy and been around a while and gets the hot young thing.
One of my favorite lines from my friend Davey Bamford was, there was someone we went to high school with, and she was together with one of the richer guys in the town we lived in. And I said to him, I was like, how does that work? And I wanted to know who he was. He goes, well, he's a guy that if you looked at him and saw him with Autumn, you'd think he's got a lot of money. You'd be right.
How about you, Jim?
You want some of mine here? Well, along the same lines of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, I've got Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. And women can't believe the Silver Fox, you know, married this hot younger person here. Mm-hmm. And then, but the guys think it's great, of course.
Yeah.
So
you know who I got for McVay and Goff? And I think Jess has some accompanying audio for me. Beavis and Butthead. Hey.
Whoa.
Hey, Sean. Maybe I should make an audible Holly Berry. Yeah, she's hot.
Can you, like, shut up?
You said audible.
That's awesome. That's my Beavis and Butthead for McVay. Who do you got for...
So cool.
Let's run a fly sweep.
What else you got?
I thought Pete and Russell, they're like the old-time 1960s television couple that has separate beds.
It's June and Ward Cleaver. That's exactly it. You look in the bedroom and there's two beds.
Yeah. Have separate beds?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
What? Because they're so like Americana 1950s. We're just going to go out and try the best we can. That's right, coach. Let's go. We're going to drink milk before we go out there. Oh, yeah. You know how. And then you look in and you're like, why is there a couple and they have separate beds? It's just 1950s Americana. That's it right there for you.
You know, Peyton and Breeze is the one I can't get a handle on. I don't really get what their deal is. You know, people have been kind of trashing Sean Payton lately.
Yes.
And I don't, yeah. I guess, you know, well, you know that Marcus Peters is all annoyed with him. And I don't know how he said it, but because it was a press conference after they played the Rams when they beat him. And he said, yeah, we really liked the matchup of, and who was it? Was it Cooper Kupp or I can't remember.
Was it Peters and Michael Thomas?
And Michael, yeah, that's what it was. It was Michael Thomas and Marcus Peters. And, you know, Marcus Peters, of course, found a way to take offense to that. But he's not exactly the most stable human being on earth. So, you know, that was – but you heard about that. Didn't he do a choke sign one time?
Marcus Peters?
No. Peyton, didn't
he? Yes, he did.
To a kicker or something like that? He did it after a kicker. I thought it was in the Atlanta game. And maybe not this year, but last year. So, yeah, maybe he's kind of a little bit of a turd. I have not heard anything really super negative about him. And then Drew Brees is like, he's like Mr. Perfect, isn't he?
Yes.
Got the family. And
this is what I think of that. It's the one where you talk about, man, I feel so sorry for Drew Brees. Everybody loves Drew Brees, and he's with that guy. Like, he is such a jerk. He's glaring. He's menacing. He seems like he's no fun. But he's just a prince. He's the nicest guy. But Sean Payton, his coach is just nasty. He's just not a nice person.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. I've got Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger. They're just staying together for the kids. Ron Rivera and Cam Newton. Poor Ron, he's just henpecked because the wife wears the pants in that one. Yeah, so he's just kind of stuck with whatever Cam Newton's
what,
got.
What are the pants like? The pants are really high-waisted.
No.
They have fur on them.
You know what, though? You're right. You ever, like, you think back to some of your, like, high school relationships, how there's this alternate reality that the other person has created, and it's like you have to kind of, like, shake your head like somebody needs to come and slap you and go, oh, my God, this is totally unfair. You're getting abused in this relationship. You know, this is not, you know, mentally, I mean. And, you know, that's it's something that you shouldn't be a part of. Yeah, that to me is Cam Newton, because Cam Newton's he's nuts.
He's a little
right?
Off.
I mean, Cam Newton is nuts. If he thinks those clothes look good, he's nuts. And the way he behaves on the field is just beyond me.
The Athletic, though, the website, they had a survey of NFL players, and they had the most overrated quarterback and most underrated. Overrated was Kirk Cousins. Underrated was Cam Newton.
The most underrated.
Most underrated quarterback was Cam Newton.
That might be true for the way
according
he plays.
According to his peers.
He's a really good player.
Yeah,
he
is.
I think that because of some of the outlandish stuff he does and the way he acts and how emotional he can be, both good and bad, but especially when it goes bad, I do think that his skill level gets discounted. He's a tough dude who takes a lot of punishment. He's got a great arm. I think there's a legitimate question, though, of can he be the kind of year-in, year-out, get-to-the-playoffs leader on a team? Because what you've seen so far is he's capable of greatness. He was an MVP. But he's also had years, like this year, they didn't make the playoffs. Like, they're up and down. They're pretty turbulent.
Well, look, he's a good time Charlie. I mean, when things are going great, yeah, good. But, I mean, you're going to get knocked on your butt in the NFL. And, you know, to me, it's how you respond to that. And that's what I thought was so glaringly evident in that game, that Russell Wilson, when they played the Panthers, couldn't run the ball. And they did a really good job of stuffing up the run. And Russell's like, all right, we just have to adapt. And, you know, and I know a lot of people will complain and say, well, they should have done that in the Cowboy game. But, you know, he said, hey, I've got to take this one over because they're not allowing any runs. I think the longest run was Chris Carson's flip over the top, and they end up running for 75, 80 yards. On the other side, you had Cam Newton arguing with
go to the
I thought
market.
That was going to be really good.
Cam Newton telling guys, that's you and that tough guy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Trey. And so anyway, was it Trey Wilson? And the name of the guard eludes me. But, yeah, that was look, in the NFL, your personality matters. And that's the reason why Cam Newton, he's great when everything's going well. But if it's not going well, then he's not going to be a good leader on your team. And so, therefore, and I always think, I really admire Ron Rivera. You know, and I told you guys a story about when he was at Stanford or at Cal and I was at Stanford, I just really looked up to him. And I just think he's a really good, solid guy. But, yeah, he's in a relationship where, like, what do you do, man? I mean, he is a really good player statistically. And I admire the fact that he's physically very tough, but he's not very mentally or emotionally tough.
Got more couples, Jim?
Yeah, I've got a few more. You want to hear them?
Yes.
Some of them might not be all that appropriate. In Oakland, it seems like it's an arranged marriage down there with John Gruden and Derek Carr. And Carr basically feels like he's made the biggest mistake of his life. And he's already visited divorcelawyersformen.com because he wants out of that relationship.
Bonus points for the sponsor plug.
Yeah, you see what's happening in Philadelphia, too? Doug Peterson, he's being accused of it's bigamy there in Philadelphia. With Doug Peterson, because he's torn with Carson Wentz and Nick Foles, and he's not sure what to do, and so he wants to stay married to both of them for the time being.
Yeah, three's a crowd.
Yeah.
Three's company is the Philadelphia Eagles motto.
Yeah, and Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, you want me to continue here?
Yes.
How do comedians do this? I don't think I could do it, but Kyle Shanahan, boy, he's so in love with Jimmy Garoppolo. He just, boy, most beautiful thing ever. I mean, Jimmy's a 10. But he's kind of got that mistress on the side that he likes a little bit, too. Nick Mullins, he's kind of got a thing for Mullins there, and he's not sure how that's going to work out next year.
Nick Mullins doesn't quite have the same sort of social status as his main squeeze, but, man, Nick Mullins is a good time. He's fantastic, yeah. Isn't he?
Don't you see him as, like, he would be a total idiot that people would like, how do you screw that up? And for me, it's like Billy Joel and Christy Brinkley. Like, Billy Joel, have you looked in the mirror? You had Christy Brinkley. How do you screw that up? Just be nice. Don't say stupid stuff. Just keep your mouth shut.
It's not all about looks, though, Dave.
Well, I know, but also Christy Brinkley is like the most fantastic put-together person ever. She sells
stuff. Wait, I thought I said it's not all about looks.
I'm not talking about how she's physically put together. What do you see where your mind goes?
Yeah.
No, I'm just talking about she's a fantastic gal, and you know, and she's got the looks and everything, and somehow Billy Joel managed to screw it up.
Not only that, but he plays the piano. He plays the piano, and somehow she liked him, and he messed that up. How can he screw that up?
I don't know. And I don't care for Billy Joel. I saw a thing on him where he was kind of insecure and he was yelling at people that were, it was on one of his tours or something. And that was about the time that he broke up with Christy Brinkley, or she broke up with him, I like to think. And I'm like, man, how do you screw that up?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. And so yeah,
I love some old Billy Joel, like Glass Houses. Glass Houses is a great album.
He played my uncle's prom.
What? No way.
Yeah. He's a Long Island guy.
Oh, man.
So that was when he was just starting out?
Yeah, and he had a serious drinking problem, and my uncle's lasting memory of him is him puking in the bathroom at the high school I went to, actually. So, I mean...
Classy move.
Billy Joel puked in my high school's bathroom.
Run through that whole scenario.
Billy Joel was just getting a start, so he was playing high school proms, and he played my uncle's prom. My uncle went to the high school I went to, Calhoun High School. Go Colts. Thank you very much,
Were you guys
much,
state
Wyman.
Champs?
We were not. Okay. I'm sorry.
Sorry well, about that.
Yeah.
Did you ever put up a banner that had a picture of a colt, a magnificent horse that was getting ready to...
defecate?
Yes, on a husky?
No.
Okay.
And we were not Wooster High School.
Text State in if you have any idea what that reference was about.
Anyway, yeah, Billy Joel played the... You know, he was an alcoholic. He admittedly so. He's sober now and everything. But yeah, he got really drunk while he was playing the prom and puked in the boys' bathroom at Calhoun High School.
Do you think it's most likely that Billy Joel got that hammered because he was having such a good time getting a paid gig, or because he was like, oh, God, I can't believe I'm playing high school proms? It's like, I better just go gargle some peppermint schnapps to try to get my way through this.
I mean, to be fair, he was probably 18 to 21 at the time anyway.
No, that's probably true.
That's fantastic. What's the difference between polygamy and bigamy?
Polygamy is more than two. I think bigamy is just two.
Yeah. Gotcha. Is somebody pointing out that it's not actually polygamy he was advocating for?
Well, Jim
says
bigamy, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's two. Yeah.
Bigamist is just two.
Somebody said it was polygamy, but there's only two.
At Washington State, we know the difference between the two.
Polygamists don't believe in limiting themselves at all.
Yeah. What? Well, I know all about bigamy. I already told you about that. That guy that was down in Utah with the gold machine.
Oh, right. That's how you know.
Yeah, the gold machine funded that whole thing.
All right. I've thought of Sean McVay and Jared Goff definitely as the bro contingent. I thought of them as more Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where they go back and like, let's go talk to Socrates. Come on, man. Here, now we're going to go take on the New Orleans Saints. San Dimas football rules.
That's good.
What, you got any more couples, or are we at the end of your list?
I'm trying to be a good teammate here. I've got, in Detroit, you got Matt Patricia and Matt Stafford, and that's the classic case of opposites attract. Because we all know that Matt Patricia is just a big, fat slob, and Matt Stafford is this sleek quarterback, prototypical, throws a really nice ball, great in the fourth quarter, and he got stuck with this worthless human being for a coach and Matt Patricia with a pencil behind his ear.
When Jim turns on someone, it's so fantastic.
I hate that guy. I don't dislike him as much as Jimmy Lake, but it's close. He's in Jimmy Lake neighborhood.
You know, that journalist that he ripped, saying that guy could be a total turd.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
And you're defending him. Danny, we got another Germans bombing Pearl Harbor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, somebody is correcting how you pronounce Socrates.
All right, well, let's wrap this up.
Socrates, man.
Which marriages do you compare the most to here? I'll start, and I'll say that mine is Ron Rivera and Cam Newton because my wife wears the pants in our family. Okay. Danny?
I think I would compare mine most. I'm going to have to dig into the past, but I think people will like it. It's a little more Brett Favre, Mike Holmgren, in that I'm married. My wife is the one with a very structured plan. And I'm the person who's like, hey, man, that's just how it's going to be. I'm not going to clean up, and I'm not going to make plans. I'm kind of like fly by the seat of my pants. I don't know how I'm going to retire, any of that. Like Brett Favre was kind of a gunslinger and didn't have a real well-thought-out approach to things. But he was like, hey, I'm just going to wing it, paired with someone who is much more, yeah, that's not the way that you should go through life. Like, we need you to actually have a bank account and follow through with things that you say you're going to do.
You know, from what I know about Sharon, that's a very good comparison right there, Danny. You're a gunslinger.
Yeah, like that. I'm just firing off puns here and there, and she's just like, okay, when's this going to end so we can get back to the actual stuff that we need to accomplish?
Somebody texted in here from 360, Cliff Kingsbury and Josh Rosen are dumb and dumber. Lloyd Christmas and what was the other guy's name?
Harry Dunn.
Harry Dunn. Yeah.
Well, Kingsbury downchick there, didn't he?
Well, didn't he
downchick?
I'm not sure because Josh Rosen has, on paper, he's got all the measurables. He's got he can make all the throws, as they say. Like the way that he looks, not from a physical appearance standpoint, but he's kind of like, they're both lookers in that regard.
You know, there's always someone in high school that you don't know why everyone's attracted to them because you don't necessarily think they're good looking, but they just have that reputation. So they're just attractive anyway. That's Josh Rosen.
Josh Rosen, yeah. He's good looking because people have told us he's good looking. He's a great quarterback because people
just
have talked about what a
mentality.
Great quarterback he's going to be.
Yeah. Well, my wife is only 2 years younger than me, but we're definitely Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, people are like telling her, yeah, you could do a lot better than that.
Do you ever try to turn it around and say, I think I could have done better?
Yeah, I do. You know, I had a coach, George Dyer, who was kind of a mess. You know, I remember one time he came into the training room. He's like, I can't hear in my left ear. He was a D-line coach. I love George. He's one of my favorites. And we were required to sing the Navy Anchors Away song. From here to Corvallis, when I drove down for a football camp with him one time, once every 3 minutes, because his oldest son went to the Naval Academy. And so he kept playing Anchors Away the whole way down. And then
how many times could that have been?
Oh, my God. I'm exaggerating. But anyway, George was just a great guy. Awesome. But he was kind of a disheveled mess. You know, and one time he came into the training room, he's like, I can't hear out of my left ear. And so the trainer's like looking in there and he digs something out and it was like a metal sink. And what falls out of his ear made a sound in the sink. It was like plink. He's like, oh, all right. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm a lot better now. Goes out. I'm like, what in the hell? There was a fossil that just came out of his ear. I think there was an imprint of like a gnat in there or something. But so he was just always kind of, you know, this disheveled mess. And he had a bad knee and everything. And he had this super squared away wife named Marge that was just always, you know, even tempered, you know, nice looking lady. Just everything about her was perfect. And he would always go, yeah, I probably could have done a lot better. I probably could have done better than Marge, just as a joke, because everybody thought it was obvious. So, yeah, it would have to be a joke. For me to say that.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Coming up next, we've got Matisse Thybulle. Really fun to talk to him. Huge win last night for the Huskies. He'll tell us about it next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Hold on, our phone's ringing here. Hello? Is this Matisse Thybulle of the 4-0 undefeated Washington Huskies who are in first place in the Pac-12?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Yeah, 4-0.
Shut up, Danny. He beat my Cardinal last night.
Well, don't be sour about it. It wasn't close, so you should have gotten plenty of time to get used to the disappointment of it. That was a great environment last night. Congrats on the win, man.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was really fun. Playing in front of our fans again, keep this streak going.
What do you think that this team has been able to do to start off so fast in the Pac-12 this year?
I think just something that we've been trying to do all year, and it's just continuing to grow and build on each game. So every non-conference game we had was a chance to learn and get better. So it only just set us up better for conference play and what we're doing now.
Matisse, I might be off by a few, but I see 251 steals at University of Washington. It's just amazing to me. I love watching you play. What's the key to getting steals? How much do you enjoy it?
Well, one, I love it. Two, the key is you gotta have a great coach like Coach Hopkins and some great teammates who can have your back. I mean, for me, I'm blessed to have the opportunity to go out and take crazy gambles because I know that one, Coach Hop trusts me because I've proven I can have success doing it, and then two, I have four guys behind me who will cover for me. So like when I go and take the risk to try and go get these steals, that they, I know that they have my back and they're not going to let it all get messed up just because I messed up.
How much do you love the zone defense? Because we have a 5'8" University of Washington fan here who is slow footed and doesn't like zone defense.
Yeah, I complain about the zone.
Danny O'Neill, but how did you adapt to that? And just tell us about that zone defense, because there's some people that don't like it, and it obviously worked at Syracuse. And how much do you appreciate and accredit some of your steals to that zone defense?
I think I like the zone because it allows. I mean, it's so explanatory. It's a zone. You play zone, so I'm able to make more plays on the ball. Whereas in a man, where I have my assignment and my guy who I'm guarding, and I got to stay with him the whole time, more or less. In the zone, I can roam around a little bit more. So it just creates more opportunity for me to make a play or take a chance on taking a pass or guarding the ball. And I mean, as for everyone the people who don't like the zone, I'm sorry to inform you that it seems like college basketball is going in that direction. And I mean, I'm a fan of it. I think in the past, zones have been a passive defense for teams who weren't really good enough to play man, and they're trying to hide their weaknesses. But now, like at least with our zone, it's aggressive and it's imposing, and I love it.
I completely agree with you about your guys' zone being aggressive and imposing, because my thought used to be that zone was for cowards, that you really got to play man-to-man. But that watching how effective you guys are at it, it's really been something. I won't say that I've come around to become a big fan of the zone defense, but I'm a proud Husky, and you guys are 4-0, so it's obviously working.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it.
Well, Matisse, you should threaten to whoop Danny's ass after saying that.
I'm glad you only gave him a two-word response there. He basically called guys like you a coward.
That's not true. He's not the one that's calling the defense. That's not true at all.
I think so. All right, well, I'll try and help.
I understood where he was coming from.
You did? I never do. Okay, so you were Defensive Player of the Year in the conference last year. Here's what I'm curious about. So, and you're known for steals, blocks, and you're all over the place. You're just athletic as all get out. When you watch an NBA game, what do you think? And what I'm getting at, Matisse, is that I more and more I'm watching these NBA games, and that we saw teams getting over 140 the other night, and I'm just wondering, you as a college kid who likes to play defense, are you seeing much of that in the pro game?
I mean, no, but it also in their defense, the game is being played in a way that it's harder to play defense like it used to be done. Like in the past, where you could actually be physical and you can't be in like the 3 second in the key defensively. So there is no room for zones and things like that. So it's a much more, the game's being played much more passively defensively. And I think it's just to encourage scoring because that's what everyone likes to see. But I still think that if I get the chance to play there, I'm going to try my best to play some defense.
I'll say this, Jim. I don't know about you, but when I look at an NBA game and I watch them, I think all those guys are rich. That are playing on the floor.
Are they cowards too?
No, they're definitely not. We're talking to Matisse Thybul here on the Venue Kings hotline. Matisse, I was really excited to watch last night when Sam Timmons got hot from the free throw line.
Yes.
Because he missed his first eight of the season. Nine, yeah. And then he made three in a row. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, Sam's my roommate. I live with him, and I want nothing more than to see him succeed. And it was just great to see him finally get one to go in. And that's really all it takes is, like, I started off the season ice cold from three. But, like, once you start to see one go in, like, it helps. And I think that Sam's going to be able to take this game and roll with it because he's a great player and he's finally hitting his stride.
Have you helped him with his free throws? Because I'm looking at your stats right now. You were a 71% shooter from the line last year. You're at 92% this year.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Don't jinx him, Jim. Has anybody? I was thinking about.
Well, let him respond to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say that I've helped him. We have our coaches. They do a great job with us, and they've helped Sam and stayed with him and worked with him on his shot. But I mean, if watching me shoot free throws helps him, then I guess I'll take some credit. But I doubt it's there.
Yeah, he had the biggest grin on his face after he made those last.
It
night.
Was great to see. Yeah. It was a really, really cool moment.
Hey, Matisse, did you play against Dejon Davis in high school?
Yeah. I played against him when he was at Lakeside and Garf. Maybe just Lakeside.
Yeah, I saw his mom was there last night. And then everybody, what were they calling him, traitors up there?
Well, because he committed to the UW, yeah. But then after the coaching change, he switched and went down to Stanford,
You can understand that.
He's a Stanford grad. Well, I don't know as a dog fan if I could understand it so much. Dejon's a great kid, though.
Yeah, good kid.
Hey, I want to go back to high school just for a second. I noticed on your Wikipedia page anyway, you transferred from Skyline to Eastside Catholic. Why'd you do that?
I have a Wikipedia page?
Yeah, you do. I Googled your name and Wikipedia, and there you were.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'll have to check it out. You said, why did I transfer?
Yeah, from Skyline to Eastside Catholic.
There was a lot that went into it, but... I felt like I had a great opportunity to grow as a basketball player and also as a person at Eastside Catholic, just because Eastside has a great community, and they're an amazing school, and their staff was huge and part in my life and the things I went through while I was there, and the coach that I had while I was there as well just poured into me and allowed me to continue to grow as a basketball player. And I mean, it was a great choice. I'm glad I made it. But Skye, I don't want to take anything away from Skye because it was a great school, and they have had their teams that were really successful in the past.
You know, it says here on your Wikipedia page, it says, Jim, that he's a black belt in karate. Did you know that?
No, it doesn't. That was Mike Montgomery.
This one time, Jim's interviewing Mike Montgomery, who was coaching Cal at the time. And he said, yeah. Coach, it says here that you've got a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And Montgomery's like, I don't know what the heck that is.
Apparently anybody can log on to your Wikipedia page and just put stuff in there.
Actually put in some nice things.
Yeah. Last thing for me, as good as it's been for you at the UW, Matisse, and hopefully we'll be watching you in the NBA next year, do you ever sit there and think, man, maybe I should have gone to Pullman and it'd be even better?
No, I can't say that thought ever crossed my mind.
Never? Not one single time?
No, not even the slightest.
You can always spot the Coug in the room here.
Every single time.
Don't worry, Matisse. Well,
they make themselves evident, stick out like a sore thumb.
One makes himself evident. Let's not lump them all together.
Do we have anything else for Matisse?
Yeah, I got one more thing. Why do you wear number 4?
I've worn it for a long time. When I first started playing basketball, it was just kind of, you know, they just give you a jersey. You don't really have a choice. And my number was actually 40, and this was in the fourth grade. And then as that went on, that it turned into 4. And then, I mean, dad on that, my birthday's March 4th. And then I'd say one of the more important ones for me is that it was always my mom's favorite number. So I rocked it proudly because of her, and I continue to.
He is Matisse Thybul. Awesome. Huskies 4-0, going to be taking on Cal this weekend. We really appreciate your time, Matisse, and best of luck this weekend.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
Four teams left, two great games. Going to give you our thoughts on this weekend's conference championships. That's coming up next on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
The underdog story of these playoffs, the New England Patriots. Can they finally win? Can they finally break through? Tom Brady lost the last 3 AFC road playoff games he's had. It'd be really nice for everyone in New England to finally get a taste of a championship, wouldn't it?
Is that Julian Edelman that put that T-shirt out that says, Bet against us?
Bet against us.
I feel like a lot of people these days build this straw man of resistance. Like, everybody doubted me and nobody thought we could do it. And it's not really even a thing.
No.
It doesn't exist. There's no underdog New England Patriots when you go to the conference championship 8 years in a row.
No, but I heard, Golic and Wingo this morning, and Teddy Bruschi was on there, and he said that, and he's like everyone, you know, thinking, oh, come on, you can't really feel that way if you're the Patriots. But he says that it's so ingrained that that's really how they feel. They're really going to take that into the game. That's as much as you could say to them, hey, come on, you guys, you've won how many X number of championships? You've been in this game 8 straight times. They still feel like it's because, you know, Gronk's gotten old and Brady's getting older and things. They're not quite the same Patriots team or appear to not be the same team they used to be.
I could see that because there has been talk about has the game passed him by. It just reminds me of Lou Holtz. I watched the Catholics versus Convicts 30 for 30 last night, and they've got a lot of stuff. How Holtz coached his team. Like on Monday, he would spend 45 minutes talking about how big of a threat Air Force and its triple option was going to be that week. This is just one of those things that coaches do, and we shouldn't fall for it. I don't think that Tom Brady's really coming into this like, I really need to do this to prove myself. I bet he's doing it because he really likes winning, and he'd like to win one more. And the fact that he's won in the past, well, that probably just has made him feel like, hey, if I could win another. But it's not an underdog story. Bet against us. Yeah, that makes my stomach turn. I didn't think they could get any more annoying. I was wrong. That's more annoying.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, if I'm just looking through like the All-Pro team this year, and I'm seeing no New England. Well, I guess cornerback Stephon Gilmore was an All-Pro. But other than that, you know, there was a lot of flashy players in the league this year and didn't really, you know, see that many out of New England. And I always see them as a team. I guess I don't pay attention to them as much just because they are so good. And I find the games sometimes kind of boring, but it's pretty impressive what they do a lot of times where, remember their offense a few years ago where they were in the top 5 and they had tight ends playing tackle. You know, they ran out of offensive linemen. So, you know, in a game anyway. And so, yeah, that it's pretty impressive. I have to say, and I know everybody's going to send hate texts, but I'm rooting for the Patriots. And it has nothing to do with the Patriots themselves. It has to do with the NFL and the direction that it's going in. I just think it's ridiculous. And later on, we'll talk to Mark Schlereth that, you know, there are some things offensively that people are doing right now, and they're doing it in the right combination. I thought Mark had just great analysis of what's going on. Part of it is, you know, this fly sweep, but the way that he mentioned a little bit of the read option and how it's kind of splitting defenses in half and it's allowing backside gaps because guys are having to hold on the backside. So, yeah, that stuff, I think teams haven't really caught up yet defensively. Think about this, like the fly sweep was going for big yardage. When's the last time you saw, and you know, this is just based on watching highlights. I haven't seen the fly sweep get loose a lot in the second half of the year. But, you know, they're also not running it as much because it's more of a threat that you have to honor no matter what. And it's the same thing as read option, you know, or like a naked bootleg, like you know, the quarterback will hand the ball off and then turn around and look. Is the defensive end checking for me? Is he making sure? Because if he's not, then I'm going to run the naked bootleg and, you know, because they're not accounting for it. So they're looking to see, are you accounting for it? And when you have to account for it, teams haven't figured out how to, you know, play the backside because, you know, if you all of a sudden aren't in pursuit of the play that goes, you know, to the front side, then, you know, there's going to be more chance for Todd Gurley to run. There's more space for him to run because you're having to honor that defensively. So I just think that that's gonna happen, and if there's a guy who can figure it out, I think it's Bill Belichick. I think it would be really interesting to see the Patriots play the Rams.
Couldn't you root for the Chiefs to win in a low scoring game and accomplish what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really trying to accomplish anything. I guess I'm just trying to. I would just like to see some of this hysteria about the offense because, you know, and Mark will talk about this too. What about what the Chicago Bears did to the Rams? I mean, you know, they were able to make them look very ordinary. And I think Goff, more than any quarterback, as far as good quarterbacks, can look the worst with pressure. So if you can, you know, I would like to see defenses get a win. And for that reason, I'm rooting for Bill Belichick to go in there and find a way to shut down Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
We'll probably hear it this weekend. I know I heard it last weekend with regard to the Patriots, that the Patriots will come up with a whole new game plan for their defense, essentially each and every week, that Belichick will go into it of like, this is how we're going to defend this. and it essentially builds something from scratch. Is that true? Like, when you watch them, do they shapeshift and change the nature of their defense more than other teams do, or is that something that just gets said?
Well, sometimes it's hard to tell exactly what they're doing, but no, I do think that they I've seen them in a lot of different alignments and do different things, and it's like, wow, you know, it doesn't look like the same thing that you're putting out there every week, week after week. And so I think that Belichick, and you know what, the reason why I think that he is able to do that is because he has seen everything. You know, this guy has been coaching for a really long time, and, you know, so has Pete. But, you know, as far as just having a knack for it and trying to figure out what exactly is it about this offense that is making them so hard to stop, you know, and a lot of times it's like you take away one thing, then they're going to hit you with another. So, but I just think it's, you know, the knowledge of knowing what, you know, what everybody has run. I mean, look, there's only so many plays that you can run. There's only so many things that you can do. And, you know, a lot of them are things that have pretty much been seen before.
It's Danny David Moore. We're going to bring in the professor for the final word from him this week when it comes to the preview of these conference championship games. That's next.